Hey there, this is your old buddy Tom, the Toonami Operations Module. Settle in, it's about to get good. Toonami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Whenever you're ready.
Welcome to the televised revolution, as we drift through outer space aboard the Absolution. With Tom back in active duty as captain, in charge of bringing superior anime action. Yeah, you came to the right place if you have a taste for animation in deep space base. Broadcast through your television due to the progress of the Bring Back Toonami Twitter mission. The same block that brought us Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball Z is back, so stay tuned. I remember way back, never leaving my room. I stay glued to my TV weekday afternoons. Yeah, and thanks to Adult Swim, I have a reason to use the TV in my room again. Cause every night I'll be tuning in, since they going back to showing Action Tunes again. Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Yeah, Toonami's back, bitches. Wait, did you say Toonami's back, bitches? That's the official hashtag if you missed it, to celebrate Tom's return to television. Welcome to the Anime Action Fan Sanctuary, with Tom providing that slick commentary.
Hey there, my Toonami generation, and welcome to a brand new episode of Tom's Prerogative, right here on the Absolution Network. I am, of course, your Primetime host, Thomas Primetime Mattis. And I welcome you all back to episode 53 of the show. This week, and on this episode, we're going back in time. Jump in your DeLoreans, grab your phone booths from Doctor Who, because we're going back in time to probably not the very beginning of animation, but to one of the first great animations ever. And of course, since it's Superhero Month, superheroes are involved. There's also another little fun thing that probably should tell you what this is, if you haven't already figured it out. And that is that it is Superman's 75th anniversary this year, and it just so happens that anniversary falls on, well, there's no getting around it, it was Thursday. Yeah, I'll get to that in a second, because this episode originally intended to be out Thursday. But yeah, it's Superman's 75th anniversary. Was this past Thursday. So, we are covering the Fleischer Superman shorts, all 17 of them, that were released in movie theaters in the 1940s. An animation that, as many of you know, is very influential, not just to American animation, but animation all across the world. Being one of the first, like I said, one of the first great animations ever released. You know, when people talk about, like, the first animations that, you know, really are talked about, even though they may not be the first, you know, or at least I should say when they're talking about the great firsts, you know, they're talking about Walt Disney and his cartoons, Silly Symphonies and that stuff. They're talking about the Fleischer Brothers with Superman, Popeye, and Betty Boop. They're talking about the Warner Brothers. Walt had Silly Symphonies. I'm blanking on the name. It was another sort of orchestra-like based type of name, and I'm blanking on it, and I really shouldn't. But yeah, we're going to the Wayback Machine for Superhero Month, and we're covering a cartoon I think everybody's seen at one point or time. And yeah, I'm calling this a cartoon, which it is. We're going to get into the history and its influence on the animation later, because there is a whole topic to discuss there. But, you know, it really is. This is actually the first time I've sat down and watched the Fleischer Superman cartoons. Again, thank you, Netflix. I want to say 8-9 years at the very least, if not more. It's one of those, again, watching these cartoons after I've done all these years of research on animation, and, you know, the theories I've come up with and everything. It's just, it's like, wow. And again, it's not that I never watched them. I remember watching them growing up. In fact, this probably was my first introduction to superheroes. I remember, you know, if you've listened to my Christmas specials, you know, I talk about the year I got a Nintendo, 1989, I believe it was, in California. And I talked about, you know, there were several great gifts. One of them was Hulk Hogan. I can't remember if that Christmas or it was the Christmas after the first one in Florida, possibly. But I got, on one of those two, I got two VHS tapes. One was a VHS tape of like two or three Daffy Duck cartoons. And I remember what two of them were. Two of them were with Porky Pig. One was the one where Daffy and Porky are always late, and so their boss threatens them if they're fired one more time, or if they're late one more time, he'll fire them. And so it's the whole thing of where, oh, you know, though everything at night is keeping them up, you know. And then the other one is the talent agent one, where Porky is a talent agent and Daffy's trying to, you know, get him to watch his act. You know, the one where he, you know, Daffy dresses up to sort of like Brazilian dance. He goes, hey, da boom, da boom, da boom, da boom, da boom, 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 boom. Yeah, I can't sing, but you already knew that. But the other VHS that I got that holiday was a tape of the Superman Fleischer cartoons. And I believe it was, I want to say like three or four of them. I know one was The Mad Scientist, which is the very first episode. I know one was the one where it was the telescope that was pulling asteroids down. The magnetic telescope, as I look at the title list. One was, I'm trying to look at it right now, was Jungle Drums. And I can't remember what the fourth one was. I know it was at least that three. But to close a long story, you know, that's where I, you know, first saw this cartoon. And so again, to come back all these years later after so long not watching them, again, thank you Netflix for that. Not that they prevented me from watching. You get the point. I finally got to watch them because of Netflix. Yeah, it was really a joy to watch. You know, again, I've actually been preparing for this because I've been watching them for a month. Every time I'd go to sleep, I'd go to sleep watching the Fleischer cartoons on Netflix. I've watched all the episodes a couple of times. And again, it's something we'll talk about here is that I'm really amazed by really the quality of this animation, the quality of everything a part of these short movie cartoons. Considering 1940s and the technological disadvantages they have compared to what we have now. Because I'll say this quite honestly, these cartoon shorts are better than 90% of the animation that's out there today. And I'm not just talking about American, I'm talking about Canadian, French, Japanese, Chinese. Just great quality 10-minute shorts. It's animation at its finest, but that's here nor there. We're going to talk more about that in the review. So, let's get right into it. Let's go over our synopsis. The Fleischer Superman cartoons. Long ago, there was a fantastic planet named Krypton. A planet of great science. But one day, a planet-destroying cataclysm destroys Krypton. In its last moments, one of its most brilliant scientists sends his only child fleeting away from the planet right before it explodes. The rocket with the young boy lands on Earth, where Jonathan and Martha Kent find him. They raise him up on traditional American values of truth, justice, and the American way. And when he comes of age, he joins Major Metropolitan newspaper under the disguise of Clark Kent as he fights for truth, justice, in the American way as Superman. More powerful than a locomotive, faster than a speeding bullet, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound, the incredible Man of Steel, this is Superman! And welcome back, and let's get right into it as we usually do. And of course, let's start off with music. I really enjoyed the music for this series, and it was really interesting, at least in my mind, going back and forth on, you know, really how to judge this music. Because the music is iconic, and it's very well done. The orchestra, just there's a grandeur to it. At the same point in time, when you look at the music and the score through these cartoons, it is a very simple soundtrack. Maybe, you know, 7, 8, you know, possibly 10 pieces all together for the entire 17 shorts. Though I could be wrong about that. But, you know, there's the basic pieces that are used, and then individual pieces are used over again in certain shorts. You know, I believe the same music used for the Mechanical Monsters is used for, like, when the giant T-Rex escapes. But, you know, at the same point in time, it's just, the music is wonderful. It's just grand to hear. It's got that grandeur from the orchestra and everything, and it's definitely something to, when you listen to it, you can tell that the effort was really put into making these cartoons as grand and as fantastic as they possibly can. And I think at the end of the day, that's why I ultimately judge that the music is just absolutely incredible. Because the music was there to make it grand and fantastic. I think the one thing I guess I'm also weary on is, you know, this is usually, if it was done today this way, I don't know if I would like the music. And I say that because it's one of those things to where the music has a much more grander stage. It can sometimes outshine it. It doesn't hear. And that a lot has to do with probably the lack in technological advances. But this would almost possibly be today completely overused if it was done this way. To a way to where the music would, not overlook, but, you know, overshine the animation and everything going on, and become a crutch of the director to display feelings when they couldn't on screen for whatever reason. More often than not, if it was done these days, that crutch would be because, you know, they ran out of an animation budget. but here it works just fine, and it's used perfectly, and it's really above that line of really being, you know, you hear the music when it's there, and it's part of the animation. But it really does a great job of enhancing it. Just great. Of course, the classic Superman intro, I think there are several pieces of Superman music that are iconic. And at least for me, the two big ones are, of course, the John Williams movie score. And it would be the Superman intro for this piece. And then just some of the great dramatic music that's always used. And one of the things also is, again, here we can talk about sound design. how they make the music really different, even though they're using the same pieces over and over again a lot of times, are, you know, I think to the Mad Scientist, where it's that sort of electronic gun and it's like shooting these bullets, and the music is timed to where, like, they changed it up just a little bit to where, like, the drums are beating when Superman is getting hit by each of these pellets. But it, and you know, also the percussion is hitting when he's, like, fighting back and punching at him in that very first episode. And so, again, that's something else to talk about is that, again, they didn't allow it to be overshadowed as well. Or let the music overshadow the animation, even though it was there on a much grander scale. It was, you know, again, very well timed, and the, you know, the sound effects and not sound, well, you know, sound effects and the sound design that was used throughout the show all worked congruently with the music that was really, really well done. Let's talk about animation here as we move on to the next point. I just love the animation. It just, this is just such incredible animation when you think back to the time it was done, and just, this is why I love 2D animation. You know, this, you know, you can feel the soul done in the work here. Classic Fleischer animation work. Something I probably should have talked about at the beginning. The first, as I look at it here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 shorts were done by Fleischer Studios. And then the last 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 were done by Famous Studios. Because, you know, these shorts came out at during a time when the Fleischer Animation Studios were bought by Paramount. But, you know, you can feel whether it was done by Famous Studios or the Fleischer Studios. Same art team and everything really used here. And so nothing really seems different, which I think is incredible, especially for that time. And, you know, again, you just feel the soul in this animation. You know, again, this is why I love 2D animation. It's why it kind of makes me cry how 2D animation is just being phased out. And that may be in, we're going to talk about that later. Trust me, we're going to talk about that later. I don't want to get into it now, because I will go into a rant on that. But it's just absolutely incredible, just the realism off the characters. I mean, just the characters seem so realistic. And just, it seems like they're just icons of time in this case. It's just a wonderful looking sort of classic sort of 1940s America. Especially in a big city America, I should say. The clothes that they're wearing, everything, it's just, all of this makes the animation just timeless. And I think that's the best way to describe the animation. It's timeless. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. You can feel the soul. And it's timeless. You know, again, we, you know, a couple months ago when I was doing the reviews on Lupin, and I talked about really the difference between both the Lupin movie Castle in Calistrato and the first Lupin series. And I described the animation, you know, with that first Lupin series, it was animation very much of its time, where the animation in the Lupin movie was just timeless. And this is another perfect example of that sort of timeless sense of style here. It's just incredible. And no matter what time you watch it, it just always amazes you. I'm sitting here in 2013, and I'm watching animation done in 1930s, to basically look at a time that came out from 1941 to 1942, and also from 42 to 43. Yeah, like I said before, the animation is probably better than 90% of the animation that comes out from the world today. And I'm including CG in that. I'm including hand-drawn. I'm including the stop-motion live-action styles. You know, it's better than 90% of the stuff that comes out just on animation. You know, character designs, I really love the character designs. I think they nail the principal characters. They have a great variety of villains as far as the character designs are concerned. You know, it's not just one stock use. It's a great different use of the mad scientist. You know, Superman, again, just the iconic sort of timeless idea of what Superman is. That very, I don't want to say stocky, because stocky is not the right word. But that very grand build, sort of classic 1940s idea of Superman with the chest out and everything. Very broad shoulders and everything. Just that classic timeless look of Superman. The thing I love about Lois Lane's design is, you know, again, 1940s. And pretty much every episode she gets caught. I mean, well, I think it's timeless. There are things that, you know, it is, while it is the 40s, it is 40s Superman. But, you know, again, she still comes off, design-wise, as just this modern woman. You know, she doesn't seem like she's something that is just of that time period. You feel like you could take that character, or at least that character design, maybe give it some different clothes, and put it in another series, and it would fit just as well. Because it really fits that sort of mold of sort of Lois Lane, that modern sort of moving and going businesswoman. Like I said, that's pretty much the only thing that probably makes her 1940s is those clothes. It's just a wonderful design in that. It's not this, oh, they use a certain design that could be taken anywhere. No, it's just that they nail sort of the modern aspect of Lois Lane. That's what makes Lois Lane such a wonderful character that's so well used predominantly through the decades, is that she is this modern woman. She is this sort of evolution of the woman. And, you know, it's what allows her to be great decade through the decades. We'll move on to the action sequences. I love the action sequences. All the action sequences are just wonderful here. They're so well choreographed. The animation through the action sequences just flows wonderfully. Through and through, again, just wonderful ideas of, and I mean, it is very Superman of the 40s in the things he's battling, the mad scientists, you know, power wires, you know, things like that. But the action scenes just help create that sense of adventure, that sense of action, you know, which makes sense considering Superman, Action Comics, that grand sense of fantasticism that, you know, moviegoers wanted to see when they went to the movies. Because again, you know, these 10-minute shorts were playing before movies. And you also gotta think the idea of these cartoons were to, you know, not fantasize people, but fantanticize, if that's even a word. I think you people understand what I'm trying to say here. But, you know, just, you know, expand people's minds and make them amazed and really get them psyched up for the movie that was going to happen. And because this is what these cartoons were used for in the movies. You know, not, they were also shown by themselves, but they would also be shown before the main feature, and they would get people psyched for the movie. Kind of like how we use trailers in the summer today. Or as we get towards summer, you know, you go to the movie theater, like, oh, there's the new Superman trailer! Oh, there's the new Star Trek trailer! You know, trailers kind of taking over what, you know, cartoons like the Fleischer Superman cartoons do today. And then moving on to the last sort of animation aspect, the backgrounds and the special effects. The backgrounds and special effects are just wonderful. Just, you know, again, everything hand-drawn, nothing computer. Special effects are, you know, again, very sort of classic, sort of 40 cartoon style special effects. But at the same point in time, you know, the backgrounds are just gorgeous. There's so many wonderful locations. Well, I'm not going to say... There's one episode I kind of have a problem. We're going to get to that when we get to story. Because we're gonna talk about the episodes in the first talking point about story. But, you know, all in all, the backgrounds in all the episodes, just gorgeous. New York, because New York, Metropolis, they're like, I think they have it all over the place, whether they're in New York or Metropolis. And it's normally it's something that I'd probably have an issue with, but again, 1940s. Still, I think, kind of fleshing out Superman, I think at that time, and my Superman friends can correct me here, but if I understand it right, you know, they were kind of mixing on whether he was in Metropolis or whether he was in New York. It's something that's happened with Superman all throughout the decades. But, you know, they have a big Metropolis, all the different locations and everything. Even the sense of flying, just absolutely fantastic. Just absolutely gorgeous. With that, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to get into story and acting. Well, more acting first, and then we'll get into story. But you get the point. So, we'll be right back, folks.
In the decade of the 1930s, even the great city of Cleveland, Ohio, was not spared of the ravages of the Great Depression. In a time of fear and confusion, a character emerged that would entertain and inspire millions of children and adults alike. He began not as flesh and blood, but as a simple line drawing. His comic book adventures thrilled millions around the world. The magic of radio gave to his name a breathless signature and sound. Then with television came a whole new generation to idolize his exploits. In the 70s, the world believed a man could fly. In the 80s, he was reborn in the comics, and the 90s saw his death, rebirth, and marriage. In the 21st century, he returned to the big screen and saw his origin changed and retold on several occasions. Through the decades, he has gone by many names. The Man of Tomorrow. The Last Son of Krypton. The Man of Steel. His strength is incredible. His name is legendary. His battle is never ending. Faster than a speeding bullet, more powerful than a locomotive, able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
My name is Michael Bailey, and I host an internet radio show called Views from the Long Box. Superman is my favorite character of all time, and in 2013, he is turning 75. Because of this, a large portion of the episodes this year will be about the Man of Steel in a series I'm calling
Superman at 75, the celebration of a legend.
I'm going to mark Superman's birthday in fine style by examining all aspects of the character's history, from the comics, to the movies, to the television series, and beyond, both alone and with the best and brightest of the podcasting world. It may not be every episode, but the bulk of Views in 2013 will be all about the Man of Steel. He is the first and greatest superhero of them all, and he deserves no less.
Superman at 75. The Celebration of a Legend.
A series within a series, and the biggest birthday card a fan can give his favorite hero, only at Views from the Long Box. Views from the Long Box is a Fortress of Baileytude production. New episodes drop every other Tuesday over at www.viewsfromthelongbox.com, and for this series, over at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
My name is Michael Bailey.
And I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And we host a podcast called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast.
Presented by the Superman homepage. On the show... Wait.
What?
This just isn't working out for me. It's not bombastic enough. We need something epic.
Like what?
We'll be right back.
Welcome to From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast, presented by the Superman homepage. I am Jeffrey Taylor.
And I am Michael Bailey.
From Crisis to Crisis chronicles the adventures of Superman.
Wait. I'm just not feeling this.
I'm just wondering how there's a needle scratching sound when all of this is clearly digital.
Look, all we need to say is that this is a trailer for a show called From Crisis to Crisis, a Superman podcast presented by the Superman homepage. My name is Michael Bailey.
I'm Jeffrey Taylor.
And every week we give in-depth synopsis and reviews for just about every Superman book published between Man of Steel number 1 in 1986
and Adventures of Superman number 649 in 2006. We also talk about the related Superman media, what was happening in the rest of the world when these comics were published, and what else was going on in the DC Universe.
The show drops every Thursday-ish at the Superman homepage, which is located at www.supermanhomepage.com.
From Crisis to Crisis is also a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, located at www.supermanpodcastnetwork.com.
So join Jeffrey and I each week as we explore Superman during the post-crisis era, which includes Exile, Panic in the Sky, Doomsday, The Marriage, and beyond.
And write into the show at FromCrisisToCrisis@gmail.com and hear it read on the air, eventually, because we get behind on that sort of thing.
Superman created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. Side effects from Crisis to Crisis include loss of money from buying back issues, a desire to read 20-year-old comic books, nausea, drowsiness, pizza, blurred vision, upset stomach, a desire to kick puppies and kittens, and backache from lifting boxes of Superman comics. If the excitement of From Crisis to Crisis lasts more than 4 hours, seek immediate medical attention.
And welcome back, and I hope you enjoyed your break. I know I did. Martini, stirred, not shaken, or shaken, not stirred. Boy, I screwed up that joke. It's Coke Zero, folks. To completely ruin the joke, but... Yeah, I got family in the other room watching the sky fall. Story of my life. But, back to the point on point, should I say. I'm sorry if I seem a little wonky. You know, I think you guys know by now, there are some times to where, you know, I can just, you know, pop the memories and the facts and everything out of my head, and there's been a lot of times where I haven't. You don't know, and of course on those nights, you don't know how much editing I have to do, because it's like, oh dude, I can't remember. God! Bleep it! And yes, I'm bleeping myself so I don't have to continue to do work, because this is one of those nights, I should say. I digress. But let's get onto it with acting. And it's a very short list. There's really three main voice actors here, and they use different ones throughout the rest of the series. I didn't think it was important to list them, really. Just the three main actors. But you have Bud Collier as Clark Kent / Superman. Jonah Alexander as Lois Lane. Jackson Beck as Perry White and the narrator. And, you know, all in all, I thought the voice acting was done extremely well. Again, especially for its time. The actors did a wonderful job. Joan Alexander as Lois Lane was just fun to listen to, I think, in my mind. Captured that sort of very unique attitude of Lois Lane, that whole... I gotta get the story. That very competitive streak of her. That I gotta get the story first. Why are you sending Clark with me? You know, Clark's just a weakling again. And it's sort of that classic Superman story. You know, before Lois Lane would find out that Clark was Superman, because she did eventually find out in the Golden Age, or was it the Silver? It was the Golden or Silver Age. I can't remember which age. Again, that's a weak part of my comic book knowledge. I apologize, folks. That's that can just pop off the top of my head. Again, my Superman friends will, correct me as they're screaming at their computer screens, telling me, "You idiot!" But yes, that great job, sort of that competitive nature with Clark. Bud brought this sort of very calm, cool, collected attitude to Clark. And I'm sorry if I'm laughing here, folks. I'm not laughing at what I'm thinking of because, you know, not only am I off on picking on memories, I'm also off on spelling. I'm looking at my notes, and I don't have Clark. I had Clack Kent. Professional podcasting. You heard it here, folks. Yeah, you heard it here first, folks. Yes, it's one of those nights. but no, he calm, cool, collected, but did a wonderful job. And again, this really goes back to more animation. But I think my favorite pieces of audio from Bud as Clark Kent were towards the end, you know, after Superman saved the day. And it's like, amazing story, Lois. You know, it was an incredible find. He goes, oh, thanks to Superman. And he... You can almost hear the sigh along with the wink, and it's just that it's what made these anime. Again, we'll talk more about this. Well, we're gonna talk about more a lot of stuff when we get to story. But yeah, to me, that's one of the best things was that end, or at least all the endings, to where it was the same thing every time, but it was just that knowing wink that for whatever reason made me laugh. It's like, oh, this is the 40s. It doesn't... It was something that dated it, but it's just like... Yeah. I think you get what I mean, but it was just incredible. And the voice acting throughout was just wonderful. It's actually interesting to note that probably one of the most iconic sort of sound bites from Toonami. You know, and this brings it all the way back to... Because they did show the Flash of Superman cartoons at some point on Toonami. I just can't remember off the top of my head when. And at this point, I'm too lazy to look it up. I'm not going to stall for time. But, you know, there's a line by the mayor, and I know which episode it is. It's the Bullet Tear. Yeah, I believe it's the Bullet Tears. Yeah, the Bullet Tears is what. Because I was looking at it, is it the Bullet Tears or is it the Billion Dollar Limiter? No, the Billion Dollar Limiter was the train one. The Bullet Tears, which is where this group of criminals are trying to blackmail Metropolis. And they have this sort of bullet car that flies and everything. But, you know, they give their demands, and sort of Lois and Clark go to the mayor for a comment on, he goes, "We will not be intimidated by criminal threats." Ow. I just meant to hit my computer table, and I missed, and I hit my knee. Professional podcasting, folks. Oh, man. Okay, cool, calm, collected. Get back here. But no, I think a lot of Toonami fans will remember that soundbite, you know, being used in a lot of the sort of the Toonami music videos and everything. And, you know, we will not be intimidated by criminal... we will not be intimidated by criminal threats. My knee's still hurting. But no, that's just a very iconic soundbite that I personally remember from Toonami. And to rewatch this and then hear that line, like, oh my god, this is where it came from. Oh, that was just amazing. But yeah, through and through, I thought the voice acting was just absolutely incredible. With that, let's move on to story. And as we move on to story, of course, the first point is the overall plot. Here's the overall plot. Something happens. It's either one of several things. Either one, it's a mad scientist, or it's a natural disaster. Or in the occasional one or two, or should I say three episodes, the Japanese or Nazis are up to bad things. You know, Lois gets captured eventually. Superman has to come and save her, because this looks like a job for Superman. Superman saves the day. He saves Lois. Lois gets the story. Clark gives us a knowing wink. That's the plot, folks. I mean, at the end of the day, the plot for all these episodes are the same. It's action-adventure, and you know, there's either a robbery, a mad scientist trying to rule the world, insert, you know, M. Bison soundbite here. I'll let you do it yourself, though. or there's a natural disaster, like in Volcano, or Terror in the Midway, or the Arctic Giant, well, that's not so much a natural disaster, much of it is a Tyrannosaurus Rex coming to life after being frozen in ice, or it's something like the Japators, or the 11th Hour, or, Jungle Drums, or Secret Agent, where it, you know, again, it's sort of, yeah, this is during World War II, or very much after, too, so it's, you know, the whole, you know, Superman is an agent for America, type of thing. Yeah, we're gonna get to the 11th Hour in just a second. I have some... I kind of have issues. I talked about this episode on Facebook with friends, so... Well, we're gonna get to it in a second, but, I was just looking at the list, and I just realized what the fourth episode was on that VHS. It was The Mummy Strikes, was the fourth episode. So it had two from the Famous era and two from the Fleischer. But even though it is this very simple plot that really is kind of used over and over again, it's almost like, you know, a friend who knows who he is, and I've already said his name too much on podcasts this month. he would talk about the Incredible Hulk television series where, you know, you could time the Incredible Hulk Hulking out, you know, at like the 20 and the 50 minute mark. Because you do it twice an episode, usually. And, you know, here it is, it's the same thing. It's the same basic plot every time. It's done in different ways, and as I look at the list, there's a great variety in the way they space out different things. You know, between, you know, just classic robberies and mad scientists and sort of natural disasters. But, you know, again, it's like, around the 4 minute mark, Superman's going to appear, and the rest of the is him trying to save the day for the next couple of minutes, and then, you know, of course, Lois writing the story. It's a really good formula, you know, at the end of the day. It's a very timeless formula for Superman, for at least for the classic idea of Superman. It's a very timeless formula. And it's something I enjoyed watching, you know, with the exception of one episode, which, again, I'll get to. I really didn't have an issue with any... the World War II stuff, where Superman is an agent, and we'll get into it now. It's really the ones I kind of have a problem with. I think they kind of date the movie. And I have to laugh. At the end of the 11th Hour, they have one of my favorite, dumbest, stupidest, sort of, World War II propaganda songs. I'll get to, but just to finish the thought on the rest of the episodes, again, it's just a timeless formula that works, and it's very action-oriented, very adventure-oriented, and it really gets you into the show, and I feel the story is just really solid, and really that helps make it such a great animation. Now, getting on to the episodes I have issues with, which are the sort of propaganda episodes, you know, Japators, The 11th Hour, Jungle Drums, Secret Agent. Now, Jungle Drums and Secret Agent I actually don't have that much of a issue with. I thought they were very, especially Jungle Drums, I thought was really, really well done. I questioned some of the motives of the characters at that point, but you know. But I really did enjoy the episode. Japators was okay to me. I think my issue with it is the only reason they were Japanese is because that's who we were fighting. They could have just easily been German. I think, yeah, it's my love of Japan coming out here. But the 11th Hour, it's just the eyes and that episode, if anything else, is the one episode of this series that's very dated. Because of sort of the racial references made here, the way the eyes are drawn, which are, it's like, I'll be honest, I kind of felt like, wow, that's really offensive. And trust me when I tell you, it takes a lot for me to be offended. I'm the guy that loves the aristocrat joke, okay? It takes a lot to offend me. And this is one of them. And again, talking with friends, and one of my friends again made a really great point. It is, it's of its time period, and I have to place it in sort of in that time bubble, and which I understand, but it's like, it just blows my mind. Like, wow, 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 wow! I can't believe they did that. Oh my god! Oh. This is my best reenactment of something that went on for like 10 minutes as I watched this episode. Though I have to admit, by the end of the 11th hour episode, I was laughing my ass off because of the song that plays, which is, again, it's a song that I found, first heard about in a Batman book of all things that I read. There was a book on sort of Batman fandom and, you know, how it's affected Batman, how Batman has affected them, and, you know, how it describes who Batman is. It's sort of a really, it's a great look into sort of psychology, and I'm completely blanking on the name, and I love that book. But, you know, during the chapters where it talked about World War II, it talked about a lot of propaganda songs, and one of them is called Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition. I love that. There is nothing more of an, especially if you go into, yeah, it's somewhat of a political statement, so I apologize to all those. But considering sort of the whole gun debate that's going on right now and sort of discussion about guns in America, doesn't that seem like the NRA's like theme song right now? Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. I'm just saying. But it's like, I heard a, praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. It's like, really? They just put that in the car? Oh, yeah, that Thompson, I'm playing. It has to be placed in a time bubble, but it's like, that episode, 11th hour, I guess there's nothing necessarily bad about the episode. I mean, the basic plot of the episode, it really is somewhat different, is that Superman is performing sabotage in Japan. You know, him and Lois are there to, you know, sort of look, not look into the Japanese government, but I guess report, you know, they're like reporters that have been allowed into the country. And while there's, you know, Clark is, of course, donning his Superman gear and going out every night and performing sabotage on, you know, the war vehicles and the ships and everything of Japan and trying to diminish their military presence. And so in an attempt to try to get Superman to come out, they capture Lois Lane and threaten to kill her if Superman doesn't stop and then leave Japan immediately, which of course leads to him saving her, some more military weapons being destroyed, you know. And as Lois goes home, Clark stays for a little longer, and of course there's more sabotage. But again, like I said, it's not so much the plot. It's not so much the plot, so much it's like just the way the Japanese are portrayed. I'll say this. I'm kind of stalled for time because I was trying to figure, should I recommend watching this episode? And I kind of do, just for the reason that you can look into it and it would be a sort of good look into what America was in the 1940s and sort of the way media was used to sort of progress sort of the national interests going on around the world. You know, we talk about propaganda and we use it usually in a bad term, sort of describing, you know, what the bad guys are getting their message out. But propaganda is used by every country in the world. I guess it just depends on your point of view whether it's good or bad. So it's just an interesting look into, again, sort of, because again, you know, things like Captain America and Superman and all of these characters, including Batman, were used in one way or another during the sort of the war years to increase public support for the troops and everything and for the fighting going over there. With that, I think a great next point to go into is, again, the version of Superman. This is the classic sort of 40s version of Superman, which is just a sort of great classic action-adventure type of Superman. Very much different from the Superman of the 90s and everything. There's a much more... And I love the more character-driven stories of the 90s involving Superman. It's really, that's sort of the Superman I kind of grew up with. You know, the Superman cartoons, and, you know, kind of going back and look at the comics that were during that same time period, it really reflects sort of the Superman stories that I like to read, the more character-driven stories, the stories that really are more about Clark Kent, where, you know, again, it really is the idea that they're all one person. You know, neither, you know, to an extent, Clark Kent is the real person. You know, the super, you know, not that it's a mask, Superman is who he is, but in all actuality, he's Clark Kent. He's that sort of farm boy from Smallville who's been built on great traditional American values of, you know, truth, justice, and the American way, and, you know, the belief in the good of people and everything. And Superman is sort of the vehicle in which he, you know, goes out and does the right thing to use his, you know, great abilities with great responsibility and, you know, to do good. And it is a more character-driven, behind the character there. Where here it is more of that classic action-adventure. It's Superman, and Clark Kent's the secret identity that he uses to, so people don't, you know, he's a mystery to the people, and he fights for truth, justice, and the American way, which I think I've said like 10,000 times now. but it, again, that classic sort of 40s to where, again, the natural disasters... robbers and mad scientists, and the war episodes, and you fights for America against the Nazis. I mean, let's be honest, we don't have a problem with Superman knocking the hell out of. I remember somebody made a comment on Facebook once. I said, "It's official. The only two people we're allowed to hate anymore are Nazis and aliens." And I kind of laugh at it, but it is kind of true. But yeah, it's just, it's classic sort of, it's all the classic sort of villains that Superman would face in the 40s. Because it was, again, Action Comics was, again, as it said, it was action-adventure. And I think that's another reason why people really should watch these animations, these cartoons. Is because, again, it is a great look in sort of the classic history of Superman himself. We move on to the last point, which is, you know, as I sort of talked about at the beginning, these cartoons have a great importance in animation history. In animation, in anime history, the style of anime. You know, again, a lot of Japanese animators, especially the first generation anime makers in Japan, that's, of course, I'm talking about like Speed Racer, Astro Boy, Gigantor, Kimba of the White Lion. You know, all of them, you know, talk about, you know, Superman, the Flash of Superman cartoons being such a great influence on them. And even modern day anime style, you know, and as I talked about, you know, we are in sort of the more modern day anime style. That first generation is an anime style all upon its own. That's very unique. That's really more in that fusion category. Those who know my, you know, theory of animation categorization understand what I'm talking about. But, you know, I categorize animation into several groups. And within hand-drawn animation, there's cartoons, there's anime style, and then there's fusion, which is sort of a mixture of both cartoon and the anime style. And it's... I feel that first generation anime, you know, like 45 to 60, you know, before Walt Disney's Sleeping Beauty, is all in that fusion category. But, yeah, that first generation of anime makers hails influence from it. Bruce Timm, creator of the DC Animated Universe, cites his, especially for Batman the Animated Series, cites his influence from the Fleischer cartoons. You know, the legendary Hayao Miyazaki sites being majorly influenced by those cartoons. In fact, you know, the Mechanical Monster episode really influenced him. You know, he uses a very similar design to that in a final episode of the second Lupin series. I think he also uses a similar thing in Castle of Calistrato. I could be wrong on that. It's either that or it was another episode he also used it in the second series of Lupin. And he ends up using the robot. There's a very similar design robot in his Castle in the Sky animated movie. Thinking about it now, it's like, wow, yeah, they are, that robot design is just really, really similar. So that played a huge influence for Hayao Miyazaki. So it's just all the different animators all across the world that the Fleischer cartoons of Superman have influenced. It's just, it's got a great important place in animation history. And a lot of it has to do, again, it's so different from the other cartoons that are coming out at the time. Because, again, it's things like Betty Boop, Felix the Cat, Popeye. Very traditional, classic sort of cartoon style. Very cartoony, very poppy. You know, the things you think of when you think of Betty Boop and Looney Tunes and Popeye, Felix the Cat, and sort of the silly symphonies, and just the whimsical nature of the animation here. And then you have the Fleischer Superman cartoons, which are just really ultra-realistic. I mean, it just, the realism here is just absolutely incredible. It's amazing. It's just, like I said, and again, the animation quality, it's not just the quality of the animation, but again, that attention to detail that's just absolutely amazing, that's like more detailed than 90% of the stuff that's out today. And I'm talking even like CG stuff. It's just absolutely amazing. So, it's just the importance. I think anybody who's an animation buff, if you've not seen these shorts, get Netflix or go on to Netflix and watch them now. I mean, it's an important part of animation history, and it is really part of the really set the stage for the first generation of anime and for the modern day anime. It's influenced so many people. You know, it's also set the stage for American anime, or at least the resurgent, because it's huge influence on Bruce Timm, as I said before. So, it's a very important aspect of not just American, not just Japanese, but of world animation. Because of all the people it's influenced. Yeah, and as I go into final thoughts here, I think that's the thing about it, is this animation, to use a word I used during the animation segment, is timeless. I think it's the best way to describe it. It's just timeless. It's a grand, important aspect of animation history. And even beyond that, they're wonderful animations to watch. They're just so much fun to watch. They're just classic action-adventure tales of Superman. And it's fun to just lay in my bed and just watch it. You know, like I said, this past month, what I've been doing is either laying on the couch as a sort of rest before bed, or I had my PS3 in my room for a little bit during Passover, so before I'd go to sleep, I would turn on the Superman Fleischer cartoons and I'd watch a couple episodes. And it's just the quality of the animation, the great, I don't want to say great acting, but the wonderful acting, I should say. You know, the very fun sort of setup of each episode plot-wise. The music, which is, like I said, just incredible for what it is. It's amazing, and I think anybody who's an animation buff, anybody who loves entertainment, you know, these are one of those must-haves for anybody who is either an animation fan of any kind, and a, you know, somebody who just loves sort of the classic movies. You know, if one of those people that you love sort of what cinema is, because truly these shorts are what cinema is. Everything that makes cinema great And they're everything that makes people want to go to the movies to watch cinema. And so, I just can't suggest enough the Superman Fleischer cartoons. So, with that being said, that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. And maybe I should give if it wasn't obvious, I gave it 5 out of 5 stars. I got a bit ahead of myself there, folks. But yeah, I give the Fleischer Superman cartoons 5 out of 5 stars. But that is it for this review of Tom's Prerogative of the Superman Fleischer cartoons. If you have any comments, emails, or anything you want to say about this episode or anything, remember there are several ways you can contact the show. You can contact the show by email at absolution132@yahoo.com. That is absolution132@yahoo.com. You can also leave us a comment on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to Facebook and searching for the Absolution Network. Like us and leave us a comment there for us to read on the show. And, of course, you can always leave a comment on the page itself or on the website itself, which, if it's not spam, we will read it. You can find, of course, the website at www.am.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, remember to check out all the other 132 production sites. This, of course, includes the Shaft Plus podcast, which is back with Gene and Chris talking about anime. You can find that at www.shaftplus.com. You can also find the Random Redbox Reviews starring Chris, which you can find at www.randomredboxreviews.com. And, of course, there's the other sites and shows I do. Of course, there's the Otaku Momentum right here on the Absolution Network. Check them out. They do great stuff. There's the Tokyo SOS podcast, my Godzilla podcast, where I review every Godzilla movie ever made, and as of this recording, I should soon have my review of Godzilla vs. Megaguirus out. You can find that at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And, of course, the Comic Book Crazy podcasting site, which has Comic Book Crazy and Hexcast, which itself will have a new episode coming out soon. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And, of course, while you're there, check out all our friends that you can find on the sidebar of the site. This, of course, includes Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box, and, of course, from Christ to Crisis, it is with Jeffrey Taylor, Brad Douglas' Spider-Man Crawlspace, Steven Schleicher's Major Spoilers podcast, and, of course, Scott Gardner's 2 True Freaks, along with many others on the sidebar of the site. So that is it for this episode of Tom's Prerogative. Next week, well, we prepare for the summer movie season. Of course, the big May comic book, or free comic book day movie that's coming out is Iron Man 3. So, what better way to prepare for Iron Man 3 than a review of the Iron Man animated movie? So, until next time, my Toonami generation, stay golden.
Hope you enjoyed it. This is Tom signing off. And until we meet again, you know the rest.